Technorama episode 580 for November 6, 2019. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. We do have a first timer, but he doesn't want to be on camera.
Do what? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And if you are returning, welcome back. Thank you for joining us once again. We appreciate you giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where it's not sunny. It's actually dark because we're recording this after sunset. And joining me as always from across that virtual table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy the weather has finally turned. And we had
kind of like the cottage cheese. What do you mean it's turned?
No, we actually went from end of spring to like a few days of fall, and now we're heading into winter.
You don't know what winter is, young man.
From my point of view, I do, but no, not from a Wisconsin.
The shoveling snow. They've been getting snow in Michigan and Wisconsin already.
So. I know. I've even seen some a friend in Kentucky. They were getting snow. It's kind of surprising, but. I nothing beats that picture you sent me one time. I think you took a selfie on your roof because you were de-icing it.
So shoveling the snow off of the garage roof. Yes.
Yeah. You might as well have been on a wing of a, 737.
And when I finished, this was only, 2012, 2013. When I finished, yeah. I go inside and then the news, they say, whatever you do, don't go up on your roof and shovel the snow.
Thanks for telling me now.
Why'd you tell me this yesterday?
Yeah, what was that bit of safety news about 2 hours ago?
Well, it can get... Oh, no, it was spring of 2014, because I remember we'd already made the decision to sell, and I said, I don't want things breaking rafters on my house right before I try to sell it. So, yeah. Didn't need the excess of repair. So, everything worked out fine.
I got a question, though. For the houses up there, do they... I wonder if they do the roofs, the inside a little bit different... I don't know, maybe not than here for the added weight.
Well, kind of depends. I don't know what you do, but the trusses generally have, the roof has a peak and then it's got sort of a V or a W shaped configuration in there. So
I guess you could see that anywhere. Okay. Yeah,
the way that the framing and the trusses are put together, I think it's pretty standard.
Yeah.
Okay. But the question is, how far apart you put them? Are they 2x4? Are they 2x6? That I don't know. I'm not a construction person, so I
let's
know
Google
what
that.
Yeah, no, I'm really not that interested right now.
But if somebody else knows, if you the listener,
what could they possibly do, Craig?
Let us know. They can give us a call. All right, so we have a phone number, which is, I know, not everybody likes to talk on the phone nowadays, but hey, if you give us a call at 707-530-CHAT, that's 2428, and let us know.
You remember the number.
Yeah, I did, because it said that at the bottom of the show notes. Hey, by the way, this is voicemail feedback month of November.
We just made this up. It's not official anywhere else, but we just made it up. That's how Hallmark holidays get started, right?
Yeah, the first 12th annual.
it's the International Technorama Voicemail Month.
There you go. So please call us for voicemail month.
We can do that. All right. And we also asked our question of the week last week. So we're going to play the official feedback letter music.
Letters.
And we get more letters.
Got 26 in the can.
And then we get subpoenas.
Hopefully not.
Reach right in and pull one out.
You've been served.
Yeah. Those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
All right.
You
surely the mailman has dropped a lot of stuff on our lawn. So,
you mean like the neighbor's dog? He drops a lot of stuff on our lawn too.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You don't have a lawn.
That makes it even worse.
You have a rock collection.
We asked you last week if you could get a real answer to any question or mystery in the world. What would you want to know? And boy, howdy, did we get some answers, some of which I expected, some of which we did not. I'm going to start out with Bob Alexander, who just threw up. I expected like people to give one answer, but Bob went above and beyond. He said,
oh, yeah?
Is God real? Where is the other life in the universe? Where's Jimmy Hoffa buried? Is time travel possible? Who had John F. Kennedy assassinated? How is Keith Richards still alive?
I have an answer to that one, though.
And finally, I got to inhale. This is a long one. Does supersymmetry exist, and why are the energies of observed particles so small compared to the most fundamental Planck energy scale?
Wow.
Oh, and one more. After a finally, you can't have a one more. Then it's a PS, I think. He says, I lost my wallet back in 83 with $400 in it. Where is it?
He wants his ID with his old picture.
Gary Lindrow says, what's the real story with Oswald? I assume he's talking about Lee Harvey.
Yeah, maybe.
Was Paul really replaced? There's a question for Beatles
fans.
Wait
a minute. Oswald could relate to that, the octopus.
Or he could have been Paul McCartney. I don't know what where you're going with that one.
Cuckoo, ca-choo.
That's the walrus.
Oh, walrus. Right. Trying to think of my feet. All
right. Someone needs more karaoke experience.
Do they?
How would a time travel device keep you in this in the relative space you started from when the absolute place keeps moving, i.e. Earth moving, as well as bringing you through time? And the all-time question, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
We may never know.
Well, Curly S. Dayton posted a gift to that with the owl chewing on it. John Miller Jr. says, what's the secret of to being universally understood and accepted?
Well, that's 42.
If we
continue on.
We have some other ones in here. If you're traveling at the speed of light and you turn your headlights on, what happens? Someone is channeling their inner Stephen Wright.
No, you know what that sounds like? Actually, almost it sounds like Spadowski from UHF. If you go to the speed of light, whoo, whoo.
How come when you send something by car, it's shipment, but if you send it by boat, it's called cargo? I think that's Gallagher.
Maybe.
Why do we drive on parkways and park in driveways? And my favorite that he asks, if Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water and Jack fell down and broke his crown and Jill came tumbling after, what the heck happened to the water? And who the hell builds a well on top of a hill?
Yeah.
Steve Vanderwyanen, a.k.a. Smartass 101, says, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? And why doesn't glue stick to the inside of the bottle? We have many more random questions like that. Paul Berg just put up the gif of the man from scene 24. What is your name?
Yeah. Actually, when you said that you were in line with the gif as I was watching it. That's kind of neat. I got a couple.
What do you got? Mind. Yeah, go ahead.
I see. So Jay Langajan says, life on other planets, where and how much?
$24.
And, yeah, one of my old neighbors, Sonny and Judy Carnes. Are we ever going to be going to accept that climate change is here and work as a nation to do something about it?
A nation? How about a world? Everybody needs to fix that.
I think we need to start locally, it seems like. But yeah, you're right. Susie Murph says, I'd like to know how common life is on other worlds. It's just so unlikely that ours is the only planet with life. I agree, and so does a lot of other people. And then John Miller Jr. says, oh, wait. Hey, you can't post the same question both.
It's kind of like sending your print job to the printer twice. Just make sure it comes out.
I think it was in his clipboard and he just pasted it. So there you go.
Oh, let's see. Anybody else jumping in on the chat?
Nope. Well, don't forget.
Yes.
November is voicemail feedback month. I want to get some voicemail feedbacks.
International Technorama voicemail feedback month.
International Technorama voicemail. Yeah.
First annual.
First 12th annual. Should you need the number again?
Well, it's 707-530-2428 in the U.S. If you're not in the U.S., add a +1. I can't find the plus on my rotary phone, though, so we're just going to have to dial operator assistance. Let's do the history thing. Oh, well, first we've got to close out with our music. This would be a syntax error on the podcast if we didn't close our parentheses.
It'd be like the whole thing was bolded because we forgot to close the tag.
Forgot to do control KB.
Well, the whole show was voicemail. Wow. Or feedback.
We have done those. Yeah. Not in a long time because we haven't gotten a lot of voicemail. All right. Yeah. History music.
Hey, hint.
Hey, call us. On this day in history for November 6, 2019, this is the 310th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 55 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1528 that shipwrecked Spanish conquistador Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca. That's quite the name. Put that on a license plate sometime.
Yeah.
He becomes the first known European to set foot in the area that would become Texas.
All right. And Abraham Lincoln was elected as president. Hey, why do they spell it with an L in there? Lincoln, I know. It was elected as the 16th president of the United States on this date in 1860.
It was 150 years ago today that in New Brunswick, New Jersey, Rutgers College defeats Princeton University, then known as College of New Jersey, 6-4 in the first official intercollegiate American football game. Saturdays will never be the same.
Right. No kidding. On November 6, 1935, Edwin Armstrong presents his paper, A Method of Reducing Disturbances in Radio Signals by a System of Frequency Modulation, to the New York section of the Institute of Radio Engineers.
Did you catch that? He introduced the idea of FM.
Yeah. Frequency modulation.
That same date in 1944, plutonium was first produced in the Hanford Atomic Facility and subsequently used in the Fat Man atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki, Japan.
It was on this date in 1947 that Meet the Press, the longest-running television program in history, makes its debut, and The Simpsons is close behind.
When I was a kid, that was the most boring show on television.
I know. A bunch of people sitting around talking politics. Yay.
And you only had like three channels to choose from.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. Like,
it was on one third of the channels.
All the time. Or if you were babysitting grandpa and you weren't allowed to touch the TV. Oh, boy. Anyway. Also, November 6, 1971, the United States Atomic Energy Commission tests the largest U.S. underground hydrogen bomb, codename Kanakin, on Amchitka Island in the Aleutians.
I think they made some of those names up. And November 6, 1998, the electric tilt train enters service in Queensland, Australia, and becomes one of the fastest trains in the country and the fastest narrow gauge train in service.
Narrow gauge train? Wow.
Width, right? It has to do with the width.
All I can picture when I think of narrow gauge is the little carnival rides, but.
Yeah, it's very narrow.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to English scientist George Ent, not related to the walking trees. He was born on this date in 1604.
And Ida Barney, the American astronomer, mathematician, and academic, was born 133 years ago today.
Belgian physicist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate François Englert, I'm going to go with. Born on this date in 1932. Nice job, Mr. American.
Yeah. And born November 6, 1948, American singer, songwriter, guitarist, actor, Glenn Frey. I forgot he did a little acting. That's right.
Yes. He was
48 Hours.
Was it Miami Vice?
Miami Vice. Maybe it was Miami Vice. I want to say 48 Hours.
Also turning 61 today is American actor, puppeteer, producer, and screenwriter, Trace Beaulieu. From Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking, I don't know where he's from. Oh, that. Well, yes,
you meant Iowa?
Yeah.
Minnesota?
Idaho. Russian pilot and former cosmonaut, Nadezhda.
Yeah, good job.
Because Helnia was born on this date in 1962.
I knew we had to have one in there to stump you.
Because Helnia.
Gesundheit. Yeah. American actor and director Peter DeLuise is 53 today. He's best known, well, in my book, he's best known for Stargate SG-1. Listener.
No.
Yes.
Peter DeLuise.
Not
I'm sorry.
Dom DeLuise. It's Dom DeLuise's son, Peter.
I was going to say, if it was Dom DeLuise, we were talking, Cannonball Run.
Absolutely. And many other things. Listener birthdays this week include November 8th, Mark the Uncaffeinated One, host of The Weird Show. On the Drift shares that same date of November 8th. November 10th is John Noble.
What? John Noble?
Our John Noble from the island. I'm not sure what island he's on, but at least he hasn't been voted off yet.
No.
And it was on... No, that's the way it was on this day in history for November 6, 2019. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you can go over to that URL that you see right there on the bottom of the screen. If you're not watching and you're listening to this the old-fashioned way with your audio ears, is you go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, add your name to the calendar, and we will give you a shout-out at the appropriate time of year. If it is your birthday and we didn't give you a shout-out, happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best. Where are
we
on this
song? We did forget one thing.
What did we forget?
November 6, 2019, we recorded this show.
Yeah,
actually,
okay.
November 3rd, actually. But we released the show. There you go.
Are we at the end yet?
Yeah.
Yes! I can't see the timer right now because we're using Skype. It's just covering that part up. That's the way it was on this day in history for November 6, 2019. I know I already said that, but it's just more fun at the end of the song. Okay. Let's get on with the news. We have... I don't know what kind of news you would call this. Let's go with this one.
Top secret news, everyone.
This story has a lot of holes in it.
Oh, boy. As most of our shows do. From Live Science, astronomers just found the first evidence that mini black holes exist. Weren't these theorized when they were going to turn on the Large Hadron Collider?
What yeah. I thought they thought we were going to make one here.
Yeah, right. Okay. An entirely new class of black holes may be lurking in the universe, and these may be far tinier than what scientists have found before, according to new findings. Black holes are massive celestial objects that gobble up everything that comes too close. Kind of like the buffet, the all-you-can-eat buffet. Not even light can escape a black hole's intense gravitational grasp. The search for black holes, small and large, such as the supermassive ones that sit at the center of most galaxies, including our own, helps researchers piece together how the universe works and creates a narrative for the life and death of stars. That's because black holes are the corpses of what used to be massive stars that underwent explosive demise, ultimately collapsing in on themselves. Am I doing enough dramatic read for this?
They stink because they've been decomposing.
The explosive death and subsequent collapse of stars can form two different objects. If the original star is massive enough, the explosion will yield a black hole. But if it's not, the corpse will instead form a small, dense object known as a neutron star. That famous song by the Pointer Sisters in the 80s.
Hey, no? You know what would really stink is if you have a bunch of small black holes, if they're like prominent.
Yes.
All over the place. And, you know, we finally build a ship there for interstellar travel and take off. And then you just, you know, within like the first week you run into it and it's all over.
Well, you got to wonder what the event horizon is on the little ones. Is it like 2 feet?
2 feet. Can you overcome it? I don't know.
You're going along and you just sort of nick the thing and suddenly you make a right turn. What was that? Oh, we hit a gravity
well. It's
like
the equivalent
of
a speed bump in a parking lot. What was that? I don't know.
Or like sticking out your hand and you hit a pole and you just sort of turn yourself around. Or
yeah,
the way my golf ball doesn't go into the cup. It just sort of rides the lip around and goes out the other side.
Yeah, it's like one of those things. You just call the city and have them come fill it in and keep on going.
We need a pothole filled in just the other side of the moon.
Hey, wait. No. Call Domino's. Aren't they doing that? They're doing that now.
Domino's doesn't fill in black holes.
Well, yes, they do. If you're hungry, black hole.
Uh-huh. You know, So astronomers typically search for these black holes in our own galaxy by measuring X-rays that are emitted when the black holes siphon material from nearby stars. In distant galaxies, on the other hand, researchers look for gravitational waves produced by the merging of two black holes from a collision of neutron stars. That was pretty awesome when we discovered that. But a group of researchers wondered if there might be relatively low-mass black holes that don't emit the telltale X-ray signals of the other black holes. Such hypothetical black holes would likely exist in a binary system with another star, though they would orbit far enough away from the star that they wouldn't eat much from their stellar companion. As such, the researchers surmised these little black holes wouldn't give off detectable X-rays, and so would remain invisible to astronomers, said Todd Thompson, the professor of astronomy at the Ohio State, the Ohio State University, I have to say that, emphasis on the, and lead author of the study laying out the new findings. Quote, we're pretty sure that there must be many, many of these black holes in binary systems with stars out there in the galaxies, just that we haven't found them because they're really hard to find, Thompson told the Live Science, but it's always interesting to try and find things that can't be seen, and black holes in general. So there's a search out there. They could be there. We'll see if they say they've found evidence of it. We'll lead you to the rest of the article at the show notes over at chuckchat.com/technorama. There. Over at our website, you can look at episode 580, the first article about astronomers that just found the first evidence. Our next one comes to us from our special guest host who isn't here with us tonight. Brian Brown submitted this and said, hey, possible Technorama material? I said, oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. He's also thinking wishful thinking.
Secretly wants this superpower.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
who
wouldn't? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a time saver, actually. So after years of inexplicably. I know. I'm just making up words. Getting drunk without drinking alcohol, having mood swings and bouts of aggression, landing a DWI charge, some states it's a DUI, on the way to work one morning, and suffering a head injury in a drunken fall, an otherwise healthy 46-year-old North Carolina man finally got confirmation of having alcohol fermentation yeast overrunning his innards.
Yes.
Poor guy. Getting him sloshed anytime he ate carbonated laden.
Not carbonated.
Carbohydrate. Pardon me. Carbohydrate. I was thinking the beer. Carbohydrate laden meals. So through the years, medical professionals and police officers refused to believe that he hadn't been drinking. They assumed the man was lying to hide an alcohol problem. Meanwhile, he went on an untold number of psychiatrists, internists, neurologists, and gastroenterologists searching for answers. The answer only came after he sought help from a support group online and then contacted a group of researchers in Richmond University Medical Center in Staten Island, New York. By then, it was September of 2017, more than 7 years after the saga began, poor guy, the New York researchers finally confirmed that he had had a rare diagnosed condition called Otto Brewery syndrome. So from there, the researchers started him on a powerful antifungal medication to try and clear the boozy germs from his system.
Which didn't work.
Yeah, but he relapsed weeks later after sneaking some forbidden pizza and soda. The researchers tried again, giving him an even stronger round of antifungal drugs. This time, though, the tube directly into his veins, central catheter. By February of 2018, tests indicate he was free of the fermenting fungi. He went back to eating his normal diet, which he probably could have just passed on the pizza and soda and went with some better stuff, but he passed on his daily breathalyzer tests and everything was good. So he stayed that way since.
This isn't the first time I've heard of this. This actually started with this gentleman back in 2011. He had a thumb injury and they gave him some antibiotics, which actually started this whole process going. And you know that it sounds fun and funny and go, woohoo, I got my own brewery. Just when all I got to do is eat a sandwich and I'm high. Could be a real problem. Like you said, if you're driving to work or trying to get something done and you're just, loopy as all get out. Not to mention the
sleeping.
Extra work that your liver has to do to remove these toxins constantly. This must have
Your liver been working all overtime.
Exactly. Yeah.
If
you knew what was doing it, obviously you could avoid that and say, all right, it happens when I eat bread, pretzels, anything that's got carbs in it. Then you could say, all right, let's cut down on that unless it's Friday night and I really want to party hardy. So what do you want to drink? Give me a hard bagel.
Give me a hoagie and some water. I'm good to go. Well, yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, just think if after you eat dinner and then you got to go to bed, you know, within a relatively short amount of time, you could be drunk trying to sleep.
Well, and you'd wake up with a hangover, too. That's no good.
Well, I was also wondering, I don't know, they didn't mention, I can't remember if they mentioned this later, but what if he had, you know, you could become addicted to this feeling, you know,
you might
become an alcoholic, having this in your system and you
can't get rid of it. Right. You wouldn't want to get rid of it. You'd want to keep that high going.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess maybe he didn't have that problem because he was searching out ways to, you know, for answers, but. Yeah, poor guy. It is kind of funny to make a joke about, but it is terrible.
And it's not terribly uncommon. I mean, there's a number of these cases. They're just hard to diagnose. And like I said, the first round to get rid of that antifungal thing, or the first round of antifungal medication didn't work. So they really had to go hardcore on him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty tough. Should we take a quick break?
Let's do it.
Come back with some more stuff in a minute. All right. We'll be right back. Stick with us. We've got a Remember When and some Media Corner and a Beliefs in Geek Library. Be right back.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters. And Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith. And we are...
The Two Gay Geeks. We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
He did.
Go give our friends Ben and Keith a listen over at tggeeks.com, and maybe someday they'll show up and hijack this show again.
I know, right? Actually, they do a great job over there. They have a lot of interviews with independent directors, filmmakers, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
And they work hard to post a lot of content, so go check them out.
Doing a great job. They're also on Krypton Radio.
Yeah.
So that's give them a listen. A lot of fun. Let's give a quick shout out to the chat room. We do the show on Sunday nights, whenever we're available, which is most Sunday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. And currently we have Mike Robeson, John Miller Jr. Who else do you see? I'm not seeing too many.
Nope. That's you, me.
We got a handful of people. If you're out there, just raise your hand, say hi in the chat room. We'd love to see you. And we do post this to YouTube the following morning after we record this. So you can actually get it on YouTube before you get the audio delivery. Interesting.
Yeah.
But you got to go get the YouTube thing yourself.
That's a pro tip. That's a pro tip for everybody.
Yeah. If you want to get notified, you can go over to
You can't watch the YouTube video until you call and leave us a voicemail.
Yeah.
And then you can watch it all day
then
long.
Then you have to go to Facebook and join the Technorama podcast page so you can get notified when we're online on Sunday nights.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I think if I'm not mistaken, on Facebook, if you're out of the country and you don't want to call the number, I think you can call us using Messenger. I believe so. I think you can call with Messenger. Leave a voicemail message.
Someone give it a try. I remember you mentioning that, but I don't remember if anybody ever tested it.
Yeah. Be the first caller. We're waiting.
Or leave some random message for someone else.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm calling. Thanks. Bye. All right, we have a remember when. Let's play that illegal footage.
Yeah.
Shh. Oh, let's talk boy. Over that footage so that the analytics won't pick it up. Yeah. We have from Popular Mechanics the most cringeworthy 90s internet guides that we can't stop watching. Back in the 1990s, we installed new software by using physical discs. And at the time, it wasn't always so easy to figure out how to use the dang programs like Windows 95. Unless you wanted to read the manual, which is not
Who
much
does
of a
that?
Page turner. The yeah. internet was also so new that commercials on it and how-to guides were all over the place on VHS, television, and, of course, the internet itself. So, Popular Mechanics rounded up some of the favorite commercials and internet guides. In the process, we laughed, we cried, we wondered why everything had to include such bad acting.
Yeah.
But most it was like watching a kids acting on a Nickelodeon show. Everybody was just stiff as wood. But mostly we learned how lucky we are to have digital tutorials to click through today. And there's one with Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry on Windows 95. There was one on the Kids Guide to the Internet.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
What's funny is the Matthew Perry and Jennifer Aniston one is 30 minutes long.
And this one, there's one that's like an hour and a half. It's really ridiculous. There's the Kids Guide to the Internet, where the parents start out the introduction, but then the kids take over, and they basically just visit various websites, and it's fun to look at the HTML 1 or 2
Yeah,
pages.
I think we've actually talked about this video before, and the kids are telling you how to get on the World Wide Web.
Yeah. And the parents say, we just installed the internet on our computer. Like, really?
Whoa. Well, in all fairness, there were only like 5 websites at that time.
Our son knows all the great sites to surf.
Uh-huh. Wink, wink.
What do you think a 14-year-old boy is going to go?
There
really weren't even a whole lot of porn sites back then, to be honest. Not that I know, but
I like how you're looking over your wife. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, the one from CNET.com on the Kids Guide to the Internet is a classic. And of course, there's an AOL commercial from 1995 where they all you need is a computer and a disc they send you with 10 free hours.
Well, you know what's funny? The way that scene is set up, it looks like some third-rate private eye TV show or something.
The still image almost looks like Richard Hatch sitting there, but I know it's not.
Yeah.
Why, we can book an airline and balance your checkbook all within a few minutes before we go to the movie. In fact, we can see what movies are playing now. All with America Online. Use keyword Technorama.
Right.
Remember the keywords on America Online. How did you actually get a keyword? And then
you paid for it. They sold those things,
really?
Man. Yeah, that's how it was marketing. So if you were a travel agent.
Is that how
they
made their money?
Hashtag travel, or whatever.
It wasn't even a hashtag yet.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Use keyword travel, and it would take you right to your thing. But I can't really do that now. That's where SEO came from, Oh, I want to take all the words.
There's about a 90-minute online town hall meeting with President Clinton. And this one's a little more modern. It's 1999. They do have
flat screens.
Flat screens, yes.
Yeah.
I think they're 13-inch, but it's a flat screen nonetheless.
Probably monochrome. Green screen.
Flat green screens. It's actually gas plasma.
Yeah. Could be.
So we invite you to go over to those cringeworthy internet guides and relive some painful memories. Hey,
but my favorite,
yes,
hold on, my favorite is Steve Ballmer down at the bottom, championing the developers.
Is this the classic jumping around on stage? Developers.
Yes.
Oh my.
Yeah. He was super into it right there.
Yeah.
Working it.
Yeah. And like you said, sweating like a pig.
Yeah.
This show wouldn't be possible, of course, without our I guess they'd be analogous to developers. There are patrons. We love these people because they keep the show going. And we want to give you wonderful people a shout out on the show every week if for as little as a dollar a show. The likes of Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, who has just graduated.
That Avner Braverman?
Yeah, he's graduated to the top tier that we have to offer.
Oh.
Yes.
He is. We got to get him the Burger King crown.
In the elite status.
He's wearing the paper crown that he can print out from the website.
And the tongue depressor from the doctor's office.
Hey, that's what I'm going to do. For higher up patrons, I'm going to put a paper cutout of a crown you can put on.
We're going to put googly eyes on anything at this point.
Right.
Ben Vaughn, thank you very much. Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, our very
own. That Leon?
Yes, that Leon and that John Noble.
Oh, okay.
Our John Noble. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, a.k.a. Grandpa Choco, Steve Therian, Jorga Schrauen, our postcard man.
Yes.
I did mention that postcard and podcast are spelled almost the same. Just one has an R in it.
Yeah.
Okay. John Miller Jr., who hangs out on our Facebook page and just keeps hitting refresh till we go live. Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry. Thank you, Amy Bowen. Thank you, Denise Inglis. Stephen Wetchy.
Wetchy!
Dean Jensen. Dandy Man Coyer. NCAF 1. Thank you, Mark. Matt Baum.
He's our staff barista.
And, of course, our newest, latest, greatest Patreon patron, Christina. Thank you, everyone. You help keep the show going. And as a result, not only do you get your name as enshrined on every episode, but you also get special content recorded immediately after this show.
Hey, but I'm sorry, did you mention Matt Baum?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did. I got everybody on the list.
Did you mention Steve Therian? Sorry.
Steve Therian, that's one of those things with the horizontal and the vertical. It goes,
yeah, that's exactly what that is.
This thing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's right.
All right. So thank you very much to all of you. You can be a patron as well for as little as a dollar a show. Because if we don't produce a show, you don't have to pay. That's the cool part.
Yeah, I'm going to make you a paper crown that you can print out and use for yourself.
Wow. And then we'll send you the snowflake template.
Yeah.
For Christmas.
Yeah. That's right.
You can have a Technorama snowflake on your Christmas tree. Go over to patreon.com/Technorama podcast and maybe some of these ideas that we throw out will be realized at some point. We'll let you know. Thank you very much, everybody. Let's head over to the media corner. We didn't do the media corner yet, did we? I didn't skip anything this week. Sometimes that's been known to happen.
No, you're good to go. Right. You're free and clear to navigate.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the media corner.
Oh, by the way,
since
kind of fits in this in the media corner, but my friend has the bar Player One Up, the arcade bar, and I went down there. He got a Gyrus game in there, so I was like, I'm gonna own this game. So the other night, Friday night, Fred and I were playing it, and I got the high score. I got the top two high scores on it, and I was feeling pretty good. I happened to go there today, and I look, somebody else is beat me out by 100,000 points. So the challenge is on.
And what was your previous high score? Like 3,200?
No, 3,200. No, it was, hold on, I'll tell you. It was like 168,500.
And they beat you by another 100,000?
Yeah, but
you
know what?
Schooled is what you've been.
No, well, today I did get up to 200,000, right, 190, excuse me. And so I'm gonna own that game.
You got to build up those arcade muscles again.
I'm gonna do it.
They've atrophied since you were 14.
Well, the problem is I can't install the ROM at home because you really need the joystick and the button to play, not a controller. But I don't know. I'm gonna work it out.
All the best games used a joystick.
I know. No, no. Gyrus uses a joystick and a button. At home, I don't have that joystick and a button.
Right.
That particular one.
Okay.
You can get, I know the patterns are just,
all right.
Yeah, it just takes some time to work on.
Read on. What else have we learned from the internet?
Oh, let me open this link and I will tell you, because the internet makes a linguist's case for leetspeak and other online text fads. So the internet has done good things for the English language. I kind of screwed up language there. The most important thing, linguist Gretchen McCullough,
McCulloch.
Just kidding.
Like a chainsaw. No.
McCulloch. Has to say about in her book, because the book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. Through many prominent opinion havers, rage about the imminent death of the English language at the hands of emoji-wielding teenagers, the internet has done no more harm to English than television, radio, or dime novels.
Or the printing press.
Or the printing press. Let's put that one in there. In fact, McCulloch makes a compelling argument that internet language, or an emoji in particular, is restoring life to the relatively emotionless medium for text.
I'd agree with that. For,
yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't have a problem using them. For hundreds of years, public writing was limited for formal contexts like newspapers and books written by educated people using very formal language. Educated.
Assuming that everyone who was writing was educated.
Yes. Formal language for the edification of other educated people. Even fiction draws a clear line in formal dialogue and formal narration. On the internet, on the other hand, the lines are much less clear. Private, informal writing like shopping lists, notes passed between students in the back of a classroom, or the writings of T. Morris, is publicly visible.
Now, sure. Any butthead with a phone can write.
Yeah, T. Morris. I'm just name dropping.
Wow. Craig's got an axe to grind today or something.
Hey, it's voicemail feedback November.
You just want to see if T's out there listening or one of his friends. He goes, fast forward to about 40 minutes. You're going to get, Craig's going to get on your case.
That's all right. So, as now publicly visible, and the conventions developed by individual or small groups for writing informally can spread and interact on a global scale. To McCulloch, it's more exciting than it is scary in reading Because Internet, the book. You know, it's kind of weird throwing those two words in there. Because Internet might convince you to feel the same.
Okay.
McCulloch describes it. I'm reading just a little bit more. This article is a little bit longer than I care for, but McCulloch describes a variety of conventions internet users have developed for informal writing, from emoji, which function as punctuation or gestures, to yelling in all caps, misspelling words in ways that reflect our own accents, like boxing and, borked,
stretching
or something.
Stretching out words.
Yeah, stretch. I don't ever do that. That's actually time consuming to put all the spaces in there.
Yeah. Not like camel case. Let's do that instead.
I do that every day. So, in other words, or internet spaces to make a point unmistakably clear. Each of these devices mirrors a spoken one, and their use also allows internet users to write in the same way that we talk, thereby expressing themselves more fully and more creatively. And I agree. I think I do a lot of things that, as I hear it in my head, you might express it in a way, like you said, yelling, or I don't really yell so much, but stretching it out, or I use ellipses all the time, a lot more, because as a dramatic pause. How about you?
Dot, dot, dot.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're pausing now.
I have to use audio because nobody can read a podcast.
You want to bet? Challenge accepted. Okay, who would read our podcast? Yeah. You know what's funny is, speaking of which, when I recorded the topic is Trek with Clinton, and I did it with Zoom, and Zoom provides you the transcript afterwards.
Oh, so I was like, "Oh, this work out."
I should dig it up and show you, because it was interesting, to say the least. So, yeah, actually, I think did I even post it? I may have posted some of it. I don't know. But yeah, it was interesting to see how it came out. Of course, it got me perfectly. And Clinton, you know, he's from up north. He's got that kind of weird accent.
Right.
Anyway.
All right. We have another one. Hey,
you know what? I do agree that it's not really a problem. Because remember when everybody was doing T9 texting? Oh. And they were abbreviating words so they didn't have to type the whole thing out.
Right.
And everybody thought, oh, this is going to dumb people down. You know, and it eventually faded away for the most part.
Well, that's because that technology stunk.
It did stink.
Too hard, and, too slow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because back then it was so hard and slow, especially older people. And kind of including me, because I wasn't really interested in it that much. Yeah. I was like, it was because it was a pain in the butt. But as we got real keyboard, it's like now everybody, even my dad's like, no, just text me. Everybody's like, who cares? We're texting everybody.
Yeah. Until you get a text storm going while you're trying to work.
Oh my gosh. Even I get frustrated at that. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that. Well, maybe we'll talk about that during our parody show.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right.
To what will the internet be like in the next 50 years? So on October 29th, 1969, a message was sent from a rather nondescript room at UCLA in Southern California to a Stanford Research Institute computer console in Menlo Park, California. It read simply, L-O.
Lou.
I think they forgot the hell. Oh, though it was supposed to say, log in. The system crashed before completing the task. There you have a piece of internet
trivia. It was missing the gin.
So every day you should celebrate with gin. What do you?
Yeah.
This was the world's first message sent via an interconnected computer network known as the ARPANET. It's in all caps, so we have to shout, right?
Yeah, you gotta yell.
On this unassuming fall day, the modern internet, as we know, was conceived. In the 5 decades since, the internet has transformed human existence from how we wage war to how we make each other laugh. Well, this podcast clearly falls short of that. It's unfathomable how much the internet has shaped the life in that short amount of time. But what will the digital world look like in another 50 years? How will we solve the challenges that are currently facing around privacy and data protection? Should we be hopeful or fearful for our changing digital world? We ask these questions to a variety of questions. We ask these questions to a variety of questions to experts. That sentence is just wrong. Sorry.
What? Okay.
I had to read it twice, three times just to make sure it was wrong. To experts, researchers, scientists, engineers, and futurists, the answers we got back were fascinating, clarifying, and somewhat scary. So some people said it's as I read through these things, I went, okay, what? Who did they ask and what were their responses? So some of them said, honestly, they said, oh, it won't change at all. It's going to be the same. So if that's your opinion, just get off the ride now. Because there's no way technology or the information we share is going to be the same in 50 years. Not even close.
I mean, I would go to say that the bones of the internet, when I say bones, I mean, we still have web pages and we click on links like just like we did 30 years ago. But there's a lot more layers to the internet than just...
I'm calling shenanigans because we didn't have web pages 30 years ago.
In 1995, we did.
You 30 years ago was 1989, buddy.
Right. That's exactly... See, that's my point.
We had Usenet news groups.
You know what I mean.
BBSs.
You know what I mean. Well, we had... I mean, largely... Well, I take that back. What's his name?
Tim Berners-Lee.
No.
Bill Gates?
No, he Engelbart. He demonstrated hypertext and hyperlinks and stuff back in the day. So we've had it for a long time, and that is still here today. You know, you go from apps to everything else, but there's a whole other layer on it. But how do you even know what's going to be piled on
right
in the next 50 years? There is no telling.
I mean, we're seeing things right now that we didn't see 5 years ago. That you know, some of the futurists and whatnot we're talking about, like machine learning to help predict what services and things like that. And that's what some of these people said, is the machines will be more of a service to us. If we do this right, we will be able to unlock our creativity and productivity, because the machines will be doing a lot of the drudgery. Some people said there were bio-connected services mm-hmm. that we'll be able to use. One of the videos said, you won't even realize, but you'll start getting hungry, and through brain connections, it will know what you're hungry for. Call your favorite restaurant, order that food, and have it delivered. Or you go pick it up and it's already ready for you.
Yeah. I think we call that the Google Assistant.
Alexa's always listening.
Yeah. Well, actually, Scott Parsons says, if you believe some, we won't be able to walk out the front door without the internet.
Well, if you believe Donna, it's already happening.
I was going to say,
always listening. When you say something in your living room and you know, Madam A or Mr. G is listening, and suddenly you look on your web page and that ad is being served up. It's like, what? Come on. That's not coincidence anymore.
Yeah. It's like thinking about a music artist like Paul Simon, and all of a sudden you're in the grocery store and you hear Paul Simon playing, and he's like following me around. Then you hear, here in the car, like, he's everywhere. They're listening.
And then you find yourself having Paul Simon dreams at night. It's just weird.
Actually, you know what? I kind of predict, and I talked about this with Michael Meningay when he was way back when he was on our show, that I think that there's going to be some people that kind of, that will have a rejection of technology to a degree, especially in social settings. I bet, to promote human interaction.
Kind of like the anti-vaxxers of the internet.
Yeah. Leave your phones at home, kind of party kind of thing. I think you'll see that.
I would do that. Degree.
Oh yeah, I would totally do that.
I wouldn't do it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm just saying, I think that there's going to be some, now I wouldn't say backlash, but there's going to be some pushback. I think sometime in the near future, because, people will be aching for human interaction.
There's a nice mountain out in Idaho that you can go live on altogether. So have fun with that.
Hey, you know, it's kind of that setting today. Fred was looking at an arcade cabinet. We were standing around looking at it didn't have a monitor or anything. He was going to buy it. And we were talking with a guy and another guy. There was two guys there, and we were talking about it, the cabinet. And there for a moment, I noticed all four of us were on our phones and we weren't talking anymore. I was like, that's kind of weird. Oops. I just looked up and said, wait a minute, we're all on our phone.
Oops. And you're all talking to each other on your phone.
No, we weren't. I just pulled it up for just to see what came through, because I wasn't really part of the conversation, but I looked up and all four of us were standing within 2 feet of each other with phones in our hands.
You all basically checked out and left.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah, we're done here.
All right. Speaking of we're done, why don't you finish us out with the last story?
Yeah. And speaking of the next 50 years, the Internet Archive is making Wikipedia more reliable. And to be honest with you, I love the Internet Archive. I don't know if you've gone in there and looked at it, but the Wayback Machine is a lot of fun if you want to go look at some old websites that maybe you used to go visit back in the day and see what they used to look like. It's pretty cool. But Wikipedia is the arbiter of truth on the Internet. It's what settles arguments in bars. Okay. Trying to think of the last time that happened for me. It supplies answers for the information snippets you see on Google, Bing, search results, and it's the first stop for nearly everyone doing online research. The reasons people rely on the Wikipedia, despite its imperfections, is that every claim is supposed to have citations. Any sentence that isn't backed up with a credible source risks being slapped with a dreaded citation needed label. Anyone can check out those citations and learn more about the subject, or verify that those sources actually say what a particular Wikipedia entry claims they do. That is, if you can find those sources.
How does that work with biography? If I was to look up Bill Gates's page, how do you put a citation on somebody's history?
If you start stating a certain fact, then you would have to have a link to that fact. I mean,
What are you supposed to say? Gates, Bill Gates was born this particular date and give a citation to his birth certificate?
You could. Or, to public record or something. I don't know about every sentence. Exactly. I think every claim. Yeah,
They're going a little far with this, but okay.
Anyway. I mean, even a research paper wouldn't have something for every sentence, but maybe the block of whatever the claim was.
So what does the Internet Archive have to do with any of this?
Okay. So now, thanks to a new initiative by the Internet Archive, you can click the name of the book and see a 2-page preview of the cited work. There you go. So some of the cited works may disappear, is what they were saying, but they want to be able to click through and go see some of the old stuff.
Podcasting
so as long
for
as
dummies.
The site,
Podcasting for Dummies by Chuck Tomasi and T. Morris.
Yeah, the first one. You lost my place. You can also borrow a digital copy of the book as long as no one else has checked it out for 2 weeks. Much the same way you can borrow a book from a local library. Some groups of authors and publishers have challenged their the archive's practice of allowing users to borrow unauthorized scanned books. The Internet Archive says it seeks to widen access to books in balanced and respectful ways. So the Internet Archive has turned 130,000 references in Wikipedia entries into various languages into direct links to 50,000 books that the organization has scanned and made available in the public. So the organization, so basically they're turning into a library, it sounds like.
Okay, so how many copies of each book do they have? Is it just one?
That's a good question. I don't know. You can borrow books from the library, electronic books from the library now.
Yes, you can borrow from the library, and the library has a different policy than just, hey, I'm going to scan this book and make it available. But honestly, is one copy and somebody could have that for 2 weeks, you'll never get the book.
Yeah. But actually, I think this is a good way to at least cite some resources that aren't going to necessarily just go away. You know, they're in perpetual,
Okay. And some things may be in the public domain that are hard to find. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I have to go check it out. But anyway, I love I mentioned earlier, the Wayback Machine. I went and looked at an old version of my website and I'm like,
Yeah.
With my hand coded HTML. I know HTML. Check me out. But Wikipedia,
there's got to be an unmatched tag in there somewhere.
Yeah. Now, I tell you what, we did use Wikipedia as a good starting point. You know, we homeschool our son for some things, whenever they were doing research.
Yeah.
And we did donate when they asked for money, because I know it's a valuable resource in itself. So yeah. Wikipedia, so.
We use it every week on this podcast for On This Day in History.
That's true.
So maybe we donate as well. Some of your Patreon money goes to that. So thank you very much. And some people say that's the most entertaining part of the whole show. So thank you.
I thought it was me. Oh, well,
it's entertaining listening to you try and pronounce the names.
Yeah.
That's the entertainment factor.
Thank you, Chuck Tomasi.
Tomasi. And careful. Our question of the week this week is, and we will post this to social media, you have the power to rewind time. What's the first thing you would do?
Start the show over.
Boy. Have a plan.
That's right.
And with that question in mind, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much, Craig.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck.
Let's bring up that ending music. We appreciate your support. You can find us on all kinds of social medias. Do a search for Technorama Podcast. You'll find us. Or just go to chuckchat.com/Technorama, and you can find links to Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff, including we still have a PayPal donation if you want to do a one-time donation or a monthly contribution. That's fine. Or links to the Patreon page, if you want to do that pay-per-show kind of thing that we mentioned. Thank you very much to all of our Patreon members. Once again, we appreciate it. And are we at the end yet? I don't know. Tell a friend about Technorama. And Craig, give us that traditional binary high-five sign-off.
101, everybody. Thanks for listening. Watching.
Bye. Bye.